talking about menopause. Menopause has long been a taboo subject, something not discussed in polite company. Even many doctors don't feel comfortable talking about it or know much about it. A recent survey revealed that just 20% of OBGYN residency programs provide menopause training at all. And when they do, it's usually an elective. But menopause is something that affects half of the population, and the taboo is changing. October has been established as World Menopause Month. In the UK, employers are rolling out special policies for menopausal women. And here in Maine, some nurse practitioners have become certified in menopause care. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Menopause is more than just hot flashes. It can affect everything from cholesterol levels and diabetes risk to mental health, anxiety, and depression. Bringing menopause out into the light, next on Maine Calling. But first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. A woman can spend a third of her lifetime after menopause, yet this natural phase of life is often treated as either a passing annoyance or a medical ailment. We'll talk about how attitudes towards menopause are shifting both among the healthcare community and our greater society. Here with me in our studio, Susan Dowdy. She is a women's health nurse practitioner and adjunct clinical faculty in the Family Nurse Practitioner Program for Simmons University. And joining us from the studios of WNYC in New York is Darcy Steinke, author of Flash Count Diary, Menopause and the Vindication of Natural Life. She is also the author of the memoir Easter Everywhere and of five novels. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you have any personal experiences to share about menopause? Do you feel as though you understood what was happening to you as you experienced it? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to this Maine Calling Facebook page. You know, when we were thinking about doing this program, Darcy, when your book first came out, we didn't realize that October was World Menopause right. Month. It's just a coincidence that this is happening today. But I think even the fact that there is such a thing speaks to a bit of a shift in society. I'm going to start with you, Darcy. Your book's about menopause, not just the physical aspects of it, but the emotional, spiritual, and symbolic meaning of this phase in a woman's life. Tell us why you decided to write, and so personally, about such an uncomfortable, or what for many people is an uncomfortable topic.
Well, really what happened is, you know, I had my first hot flash maybe 7 or 8 years ago now. I woke up in the middle of the night, you know, I was, you know, completely like incandescent with heat, you know, and my first thought, you know, being a minister's daughter was like, God is finally trying to contact me, you know, but within a couple of days, I realized that I had entered menopause and I had hot flashes. I had insomnia. I had a sense of disorientation. And, you know, as a writer, I looked around for, you know, I looked for books to help me, you know, help me with my life. And I really couldn't find that much. I found some medical books that were, you know, helpful in a way, but they really weren't that particular about certain aspects about sexual and like intimate life. I had questions about that. And then there were the sort of menopause memoirs, which all ended with the writers taking hormones, which is, you know, that's a personal choice, but it doesn't really end menopause. You know, there's lots of interesting spiritual, like you said, spiritual and, you know, emotional things. So I decided I would write my own. And, you know, the two things that really started me on that journey were I started to keep a actual flash count diary. That's why the book is called that, you know, and because I found my hot flashes to be so much more nuanced than, you know, I was reading about. You know, you'll read about, you know, like you get hot and you may sweat. But, you know, I also, you know, I had panic before them. Each one felt very different. I would feel hot, like in different parts of my body, you know. So I started to keep this journal. By the end of the book, I had three full journals of all my hot flashes. And then the other thing was, I read in the Science Times on the New York Times on a Tuesday that the two creatures that go through menopause are human women and female killer whales, and that after menopause, women, the whales go on to become the pod leaders of their community. So that idea really thrilled me as well. And that article led me to another article in the journal Nature that speculated, because there's a lot of confusion why menopause was selected, because according to this thing called Darwinian fitness, we should breed to the end. So there's a lot of, it's a big question why we stop being able to have children at midlife. So this article actually speculated that, actually, same as with the whales, in our early human configurations when we were hunters and gatherers, at around 50, women got so valuable to their communities that menopause was selected so there could be two groups of women, one to do the very, very important work of mothering and motherhood, domestic life, and then the 50 plus women who would also, who would sort of become leaders of their community. So that was an idea that I really grabbed onto. It was one of the few positive things I could find about menopause. So that really led me through the book, my obsession with the whales. I eventually went out to see the whales. So the book, in a way, was a way for me to figure out and discover what was happening to me. It was a journey that I was going on. That's why I wrote the book.
Susan, I think one of the reasons Darcy's book has caught so many people's attention and around the world, international attention, is not only because it's so thoughtful and well written, but also because this is something that's simply not talked about, even in our modern society. What have you observed about the sense of taboo about menopause?
I hear that a lot, Jennifer. I've seen women who've been going through this midlife process for over 20 years, and they come tell me their stories. And many of them do feel isolated and not free to talk about it. What I'm finding as we evolve as a society and as women become more comfortable with each other, they go to their women friends and talk about that, to the extent that even at this point, menopause cafes are starting, similar to death cafes, where women get together and talk about how their symptoms affect what's happening with them. I don't like to use symptoms because it's a medical term, but what's happening to them affects their quality of life, and then strategies that they can use to help them achieve some kind of equanimity, because it knocks us off our pins when we can't sleep, when our moods are all over the place, when we're flashing like crazy, and when that anxiety that can grip us hits. We like to feel like we're in control, and lots of times this is like the universe is hitting us over the head with a 2x4 and saying, this is your time to find your authentic voice. And women find each other. They talk to each other.
I'm going to step back and let's just talk about terminology, because menopause itself, that word, I think it's used loosely to mean after one can no longer, after one's menses stop from then on in. But that's not really accurate, right? It's the year, the one
right.
year,
it's one
correct?
Year. That's it.
Actually, it's one point in time.
Right.
You're perimenopausal up to your last period. Mm-hmm. Then there's a year, and then you're postmenopausal. So you continue to be perimenopausal until a year after your last period, then you're postmenopausal.
And I do want to talk about the physiology a lot more, but Darcy, I want to come back to you and talk about, because I know you've really thought about this a lot, why is it that we do not talk about menopause? It has to do with our culture and our society and the value of older women in large part.
I think so. I mean, I think the shame, I think there's a lot of reasons for the shame. I mean, I think we really need to think that, it's only been about 100 years that women could, own property, that we could support ourselves, And so our value was, it sort of was and to a certain extent still is really based on, on the patriarchy, on the idea that we were the most valuable, like in our fertile phase, So there's a lot of, I think there's a way in which like women have felt shame and have wanted to hide, the fact that they couldn't, that they were no longer fertile to sort of protect themselves. I think it felt dangerous, in a way to be this, this older woman. I mean, not only were you less like appealing to the patriarchy, but you also could, there was a period where you could be accused of being a witch, So there's a way in which to keep our more sort of docile, fertile self intact, I think has been a strategy, And then there's that. And then I also just think, there's just so much shame around the idea of, of our body being out of control. I think that's really true. I mean, there's just, But it really confuses me because I think to myself, like, you know, since I've written the book, I've talked to so many women, I've heard from so many women, and so many will tell me how they're made fun of at work, you know, for their hot flashes, how, you know, people tease them about it. And I think, you know, nobody makes fun of people having a seizure. You know what I mean? It just, I just think it's just misogyny. It's just like boilerplate misogyny, you know? So that is what, I mean, that's another reason I wrote my book, is to be like, you know, this is just a life cycle. You know, the female body, just like menstruation, just like birth, we need to normalize it. Like, it needs to be taught, like, in health class, in high school. You know what I mean? We need to be able to talk about it completely freely. So that's, you know, that was one of my aims in sort of getting the word out, you know, so.
Right. One of the things I was struck by learning about this topic for today's program is how few medical schools even teach anything, even to OBGYNs, about menopause. So I'm going to back up, Susan, and I want you to tell me, what do we know about what causes menopause, and what do we not know still about what causes it?
Well, there's a lot of confusion, and I agree that there's a big deficit in the training of allopathic physicians. And it's rare that they develop an interest in this field. And so most of the learning they get is after they graduate from medical school. And what we do know about the physiology is that women cycle with estrogen and progesterone for about 40 years of their life. And then toward the end of that period, when they're no longer making viable eggs from their ovaries, it takes the pituitary gland that puts out the stimulating hormone called FSH, follicle stimulating hormone, more effort to get the ovaries to put out an egg every time. So FSH rises in the bloodstream. And we may or may not flick out an egg from the ovary. And when we flick out an egg from the ovary about mid-cycle of our 28-day period cycle, the egg goes into the fallopian tube, and the egg sac secretes progesterone, and potentially the sperm hits the egg in the fallopian tube and goes down and embeds in the lining of the uterus. The progesterone from the egg follicle supports that until a placenta forms. So estrogen helps the egg form, and progesterone supports it until it's can develop a placenta. As FSH rises and we produce less eggs, we don't produce progesterone. Estrogen causes the lining to get thicker to prepare a nest for the egg, but we don't secrete progesterone to organize it, so we tend to have heavier periods. Our periods will come sooner than the typical 28 days or menstrual cycles from 21 days to 35 days is considered normal, but we'll have a period at 14 days, and it might be heavy. Or then we'll go for 2 months without a period.
So you're describing perimenopause.
That's when perimenopause.
Things become less,
yes,
less regular.
Correct.
And when the body's preparing for menopause. But we still, there's a lot we don't understand, correct,
right,
about
right.
Why that FSH goes up and why...
Well, FSH goes up because the brain wants estrogen. That's the bottom line. The brain uses estrogen in five different ways. It uses it to fix, it's a neurotransmitter. It uses it to fix brain cells, et cetera, et cetera. So when it senses less estrogen in the bloodstream, it wants the ovary, a major producer of estrogen, to produce more estrogen. When it's
I think there are studies though that show that, like, after a while, the brain starts to make its own estrogen.
It does.
Have you read those studies?
Yes.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
They're really amazing. Yeah.
And estrogen's also produced in the adrenal glands.
Right. Exactly.
So there are places that produce estrogen, but no place like the ovary. So our levels of estrogens stay somewhere between 80 and 120 picograms per milliliter when we're cycling. After the estrogen levels drop, they go down to less than 20.
So the period where women are having things like hot flashes and other symptoms like anxiety, things like this, panic attacks, this is happening in that period of days, months, years in which your body is adjusting to the change in the estrogen levels. And maybe, as Darcy said, a rebalancing of where the right. estrogen is made.
I mean, the body does. I mean, from my research, the body does sort of learn to adjust, you know.
And it does.
You know, even from my own physical experience, I'm near the end now. And I'm still maybe a little warmer in general, but I don't have hot flashes anymore. So my body has adjusted to the amount of estrogen I have.
Well, it's not so much the amount that determines hot flashes. It's the withdrawal of estrogen from the bloodstream that we know from our studies.
Yeah.
The
They also know, though, that because I know there's studies, because I just read the study this morning, that it's not necessarily the women that have the less estrogen that have hot flashes. It's not really based on lack
right.
of estrogen.
Right.
So, and there's this new thing about candy cells. I don't know if you know about that. Like in the hypothalamus, like they're sort of overexcited. And it's I think what the article was saying is that there's so many different ways and so many different chemical processes that like mean that you'll have hot flashes or not. And they're not, you know, estrogen is one of them, but then many other things have to be in place too for you to actually have severe hot flashes, which I think is interesting, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And the neurotransmitters, dopamine, norepinephrine, and serotonin are all involved in the hypothalamus as it experiences this this lack of estrogen. And what happens is estrogen will peak and then it'll drop and then it'll peak and then it'll mm-hmm. drop in the perimenopause. So mm-hmm. your brain is very having to adjust to a lot of different levels.
Right.
Before we go to a break in just a couple minutes, I want to talk a little bit about hormone replacement therapy. And Darcy, in your book, this is a very, very common practice for women to choose to use hormone replacement therapy to sort of help them through this phase. Mm-hmm. But Darcy, in your book, you choose not to do it. And for some sort of...
Right. And I wouldn't say that it's very... I would say... Among privileged white women, it's probably more common. You know what I mean? But a lot of the world, you know, I live in a West Indian American neighborhood, and I interviewed a lot of those women for my book, and not one of them were on hormones. So I feel like in the world that it's true, in the world that I'm in, probably, I mean, not really my friends actually. None of my friends actually went on hormones, but I think a certain middle class, upper class, world. I think hormones is a thing for sure. But I don't think they're necessary for everybody. I mean, I think this is a personal choice. I mean, I don't think they should be prescribed for everybody across the board. I think it should be a personal choice. And I really enjoyed, it's weird to say that I enjoyed my hot flashes, but I kind of did. I mean, I learned to really sink into them. It's sort of, like a Zen or Buddhist thing. You know, once I sort of accepted they were going to happen, knew more about what they were going to be like, I was able to really sink into them and think of them as a physical process that I could actually learn from, too. I also feel like without them, I wouldn't have become the person that I am. It's almost like I needed my younger self to sort of be burned off me by the hot flashes,
Susan, you're nodding. You've heard.
Yeah, I've heard this story. And it truly is a personal choice. And when I see women who are telling me their story, I learn about their values and I learn about how is it that, where are they, where do they want to be, and how can I help them with their value system get there. And we don't call it hormone replacement therapy anymore. What we do is we offer a little bit of estrogen if they choose to take hormones to bump that level of estrogen up just to get it a little bit higher than 20 picograms per milliliter. So the brain sees the estrogen. It doesn't have to have what it had when you were cycling, just a little bit. And many times that will help a woman sleep through the night or get rid of that crutch of anxiety that takes her off balance.
We are talking about menopause. When we come back, I want to ask you, Susan, about what are some of the other health changes one might be looking for and that you look for as a nurse practitioner. We'll also hear from Cindy Williams, who performed in Menopause the Musical last month in Ogunquit, and we'll talk to Dr. Anne Rainville. If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number 1-800-399-3566, our email address, and please, brief email, please, talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Abbey Museum, Maine's only Smithsonian affiliate, open every day with a full schedule of family-friendly programs and workshops. abbeymuseum.org. And the Dempsey Center, making life better for people managing the impact of cancer. locations in Lewiston and South Portland. DempseyCenter.org.
What began as a love affair?
15 years ago, the internet was held up as the model of the competitive capitalist market.
Is now a relationship on the rocks.
There's never been companies with this much power with virtually no regulation.
That's next time on The Takeaways, Politics with Amy Walter from WNYC and PRI.
That's coming up this evening at 7 here on Maine Public Radio.
Next time on Living on Earth, the 2019 Nobel Prize in Chemistry celebrates the lithium-ion technology that powers our world.
We knew it was important when we got started, almost 50 years ago now, but we never envisaged it would take off to this magnitude and basically eliminate all other battery systems.
I'm Bobbi Bascom, the lithium battery revolution. That's next time on Living on Earth from PRI.
And that's Sunday morning at 7 here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, changing attitudes towards menopause. Joining me, Darcy Steinke, an author whose newest book is Flash Count Diary, an exploration of menopause through her own experiences and changing views. And Susan Dowdy, a nurse practitioner who teaches at Simmons University and speaks and writes about women's health, particularly about perimenopause. We invite you to join the conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We have a little something different now. It just so happens that the actress Cindy Williams, who most of us know from the TV show Laverne and Shirley, was in Maine last month and performing at the Ogunquit Playhouse in a show called Menopause, the Musical. We talked with her just before the play opened to hear her thoughts on menopause and about being in a show that was all about menopause.
They call it the silent passage. And as they say in the show, it's not so silent anymore. But it sort of sneaks up on a woman, you know, like being moody or getting hot all the time. And then you realize that you're going through the change of life. But it isn't something that's advertised. And men actually go through it with their wives. That's why the men in the audience love this show, because we're sending it up and making fun of ourselves and having fun with it. But it brings along with it some real, you know, bummer kind of physiology. The physical aspect of it is, it's pretty awful at times. You can't think, you start, you know, thinking you're going crazy, you have mood swings and all that. That's why this musical is so wonderful, because as I said, it makes fun of all that and you have fun with it. And so the women in the audience think they've jumped in a boat, you know, in a party boat, and they're rowing with everybody else that's going through it. And women really are so good at making fun of themselves. And so it's sort of a godsend, this little musical.
Darcy, I know that you have some thoughts about making fun.
Yeah,
you know, you understand that, it's
yeah.
human nature to, you know, whatever it is we're going through, to poke some fun at to get through.
Well, I'm not against, you know, I think laughter is a wonderful thing, but I think that we've made fun of menopause for too long. And I also think there's a sort of internal misogyny that exists for women as well. We've internalized misogyny, you know. I mean, maybe in 50 years when menopause is normalized and when, you know, menopausal women can feel like they're not alone, then we can go back to make fun of it again. But I'm not really interested at this point in making fun of it now. I feel like it's just not the way to go at this moment in time. You know, women have made fun of themselves a lot. Like, we've debased ourselves a lot, and I'm not really interested like in that at this moment. No, I'm not.
Susan, thoughts?
Well, I agree. Laughter's good, and sometimes women are so uncomfortable they laugh instead of crying, and I would hope that they would get the support that they would need so that they could express their emotions authentically. But what's true is that the misogynistic effort to keep women younger is pervasive in our society. And Robert Wilson's book in 1966 says it would be malpractice not to give your patients menopause.
I hate that man.
Yeah. So my mentor's Christian Northrup. And I worked with her at Women to Women. She introduced me to the whole realm. She helped me. She mentored me in taking care of patients in a way that the patients would choose, and alternatives to hormone therapy. And her book came out in 2001, and it talked about the misogynistic effects on the culture and how we as providers and women going through menopause need to change that story. So I feel very privileged to have worked with her and then taken that forward.
So many calls and posts coming in. This is Joe on Facebook. I'm a 55-year-old woman who looked forward to menopause. I'm lucky that my symptoms are not too severe, but I live fairly healthy and noticed a huge change when I quit drinking. It does seem like a woman's secret. It's not something anyone talks about except as a joke. As women, we seem to have to just suck it up. It is a hard experience to explain to men. So a lot there, but I want to pull out, Susan, the part about drinking and alcohol. Talk about the connection.
Strategies to decrease hot flashes include limiting sugar, white flour products, caffeine, alcohol, I'm forgetting something else. Oh, cigarette smoking. All of those seem to decrease our threshold of tolerance for the fluctuations in our hypothalamus that are going on at the time. So many times...
So no coffee and no red wine.
Well, it depends. Decaf has a little bit of caffeine in it. Red wine does have alcohol. So you have to pace yourself and find out how much can I drink and how will it affect me? And is it worth it? Is it worth a good night's sleep to not have my red wine?
I found that exercise was the best thing for me. Actually, swimming was extremely helpful. I walk a lot. I live in Brooklyn, so I did try to cut out some of those things and also do more soy. I never found really any of those things like worked that well. I found meditation worked very well for me actually, and I sort of stepped up my meditation practice. And then also, very regular exercise, like an hour a day of hard exercise. Those were the things that really helped with my own hot flashes.
Go to Kate in Pittston. Hi, Kate. Go ahead.
Hi. I wanted to know if anybody could speak to surgical menopause in younger women for BRCA mutations and cancer mutations.
I'd like to talk about that. When women lose their ovaries for whatever reason before age 45, they're at extremely high risk for coronary artery disease and bone fractures later in life. And there's a lot of fear around hormones if a woman's had her ovaries removed because she has a BRCA mutation and she's at increased risk for breast and ovarian cancer. And what we found is that those women really should be counseled about the risk-benefit of taking a little bit of estrogen. And they don't need progesterone because if they have a uterus, they would need progesterone. Just until that typical age of menopause, which is 51 to 52 in the United States, because it decreases their risk of coronary artery disease and fractures from and even colon cancer.
Kate, thanks for your call. We'll go to Ann in Winthrop. Hi, Ann. Go ahead.
Hi. This is a great show. I think you should do it monthly. My question is about depression. A lot of women have depression. And does perimenopause and menopause make depression worse or better? I mean, is there hope that there could be improvements in mood?
I'll start with you, Darcy.
I mean, I've suffered, sort of from depression all my life. I've struggled with it. I've had periods I've been on antidepressants. I've had periods I've been off. I found once I had accustomed myself to some of the things that were happening, once I had accepted the hot flashes, once I had sort of, worked out my sleeping and sat in the disorientation, I found myself steadier actually, and steadier like as my menopause progressed. I felt sort of more level because I wasn't cycling, so I didn't have all that, I mean, depression was, I felt once I was outside of it, a lot about the cycle, cycle of hormones during the month. So I found myself to be steadier and steadier. Though having said that, I have had friends that have, I mean, once they go into it, they start to feel depressed. I think my guess is that some of, you know, my guess, but also from research, some of that like is hormonal, but some of that's cultural. Some of that is because the culture tells you that you're all used up and then you start feeling depressed. You know, it's like both these things are together, you know. So, you know, I think like women should take care of themselves like during this time if they're feeling, if they're having those feelings in, you know, any way they see fit, actually, whether that's hormones or antidepressants or, you know, whatever I feel like.
Darcy, you point out in your book that you find that many times women don't know how to get angry. And so when they find these fluctuations in their hormones and they find their mood is off, lots of times they will get depressed.
Right.
My experience with women is that many times women would come in, if they had a history of postpartum depression, if they had a history of chronic depression that needed antidepressants, they're much more likely to be affected, their mood to be affected by shifts in hormones and may or may not choose to go back on an antidepressant. And some of the SSRIs and SNRIs that are available as antidepressants will help with hot flashes. So we walk that path very carefully for a woman to choose what's going to help her if she wants to go on an antidepressant.
You know, I'm thinking as you all are having this conversation, and Susan, I know that there are not many here in Maine, not many people with your level of training about treating menopause. How would a woman listening to this program here today in Maine go about finding a caregiver, whether a nurse practitioner, a doctor, or a physician's assistant who understands menopause and the most recent information?
There's a certifying exam, a menopause certifying exam. Those who are interested in helping women through this take the certification, and they register with the North American Menopause Society that can be accessed at www.menopause.org. And they list menopause certified providers by state at that website.
All right. Well, thanks for calling, Anne. Joining me on the line now is Dr. Anne Rainville, an OBGYN with Women's Wellness Comprehensive Care in Portland. Thanks for calling in, Dr. Rainville.
Oh, you're very welcome. Very welcome.
What do you think are some of the significant changes in how menopause is treated today, both medically and in the way people view it?
Well, I think that there's been really quite a very large shift in the way menopause is viewed and treated today compared to when I first started in the business of taking care of women. When I was a brand new, fresh attending physician coming out in 1990, I was told that the best thing for women was to put them on hormonal replacement therapy as soon as possible when they became menopausal so that they would not die of heart disease. And I mean, that was taught to us as we were in our residencies and coming out, that was the pinnacle of healthcare for women. And it's sort of, and that was a spinoff on the feeling at that time that somehow menopause was an abnormal state, was this endocrine deficiency, which is what a earlier physician had called it and actually wrote a book called Feminine Forever, which pushed women to go into estrogen. But since then, things have really changed, and a huge shift came with the publication of a Women's Health Initiative study in the late 1990s, which really showed us that, in fact, menopause is a natural state in that women's bodies change over time. Surprise, surprise. Those of us in OBGYN never really doubted the fact that women's bodies changed and changed in their relation to their hormones over the decades. But all of a sudden, it was like this big revelation that somehow menopause was in fact a natural state, and it was not good for women to be on estrogen replacement therapy for many years after the age of menopause, because women's bodies were different, and now there's a whole change in looking at menopause as a natural state, as a natural progression, natural aging. And I think that my big take on menopause, you know, having actually gone through it myself, is that we need to do that. We need to think of it in a positive light and realize that aging is beautiful for women. And I think that that's what we really need to emphasize, is that women are beautiful no matter what age they are. And menopause is just another phase. And yes, it's very difficult and women need help to negotiate it. But it's something that is to be embraced and to be understood.
Dr. Rainville, before I let you go, I understand you are trained in acupuncture, which is not so common in your field. What do you think of that and all other alternative treatments for menopause?
I think alternative treatments are excellent. And I think that acupuncture actually has been shown in some limited studies to be helpful in the reduction of menopausal symptoms, the most, you know, annoying menopausal symptoms that most women go through, which is the hot flashes and the night sweats, but also the emotional ability, the anxiety, and that a lot of women experience, that acupuncture can be very helpful for that. But as with all alternative therapies, there are, you know, it doesn't work for everyone.
Well, thanks so much for calling in. That's Dr. Anne Rainville, an OBGYN with Women's Wellness Comprehensive Care in Portland. We do need to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. We're talking about menopause on Maine Calling.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Salaam Circus School in Biddeford, offering year-round youth and adult circus arts classes, intensive training programs, and private lessons. Salaam Circus. The Algonquin Museum of American Art, presenting the works of Sig Harvey July 18th through October 31st. AlgonquinMuseum.org. And Bull Moose, celebrating the tactile experience of reading and proponents of dog ears and bookmarks. Locations across Maine and at bullmoose.com.
Decades ago, General Electric was the backbone of Pittsfield, Massachusetts, employing thousands of residents.
You could send your kids to college, and you could have vacations, and you could own a car. And then that all went away.
On Next from the New England News Collaborative, rebuilding a company town in the Berkshires. Plus an urban planner who helped to shape some of New England's downtowns.
He envisioned a city where neighborhoods were really quite diverse.
Please join us.
That's coming up today at 2 here on Maine Public Radio. Are you a regular listener to Morning Edition? When you miss it, do you wish there was some way you could still hear it, even if it's not on the radio? Well, now you can if you have an Alexa smart speaker. Just say, "Smart speaker, please play Morning Edition." Alexa will then ask you which station you want to hear, and you, of course, will say Maine Public Radio. And then Alexa will play back the last full hour of Morning Edition. So you can hear the most recent hour of Morning Edition with Erwin Gratz until 3 o'clock each afternoon. At this point in time, this is only for Alexa smart speakers, but we'll let you know if Google Home learns how to do this. Thanks.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, we are talking about menopause and how better to address this natural part of a woman's life. Joining us today, Susan Dowdy, who is a nurse practitioner with expertise in menopause, and Darcy Steinke, an author whose book, Flashpoint Diary, is an exploration of menopause. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. I have an email here from Lynn. When I was a teacher going through menopause, my hot flashes would come on with serious red face. My students would misinterpret this as being angry, and it would cause classroom discipline issues. I had been terrified of menopause, knowing that I would be at greater risk of heart disease. And I think it's interesting that Lynn says she knew that she would be at greater risk of heart disease, because I have to tell you, Susan, I did not know that. I did not know about many of the risks that are increased with menopause, also a higher cholesterol reading, correct? What
correct.
Are the others?
Estrogen tends to keep our HDL, our good cholesterol, up, our LDO, bad cholesterol, down. It also helps the flexibility of our arteries. And so women don't typically have heart attacks until after menopause. And that's why the push for hormone therapy way back in the 90s. But other risks that women experience after their estrogen levels drop include bone fracture. We tend to remodel our bones very vigorously. And the more stress we put on our bones, the stronger our bones are. And remodeling means building up bone and breaking down bone to keep it healthy, so that the nutrients can get to it. After our estrogen levels drop, the breaking part down of the bone is not inhibited at all. So the osteoclast can chew away bone faster than bone can be built. And if a woman's at risk for a fracture, she has low body weight, she has a mother who had fractures, she has had a stress fracture herself, she's had been on steroid therapy or chemotherapy, all these increase our risk for fracture of the spine and the hip. So they're the areas that we're most vulnerable.
I sort of wonder, though, I mean, I do hear you, and I know all that's true, but I sort of wonder, I mean, as I was working on my book, I wonder how much is just aging and then how much of this stuff is actually being blamed on menopause. Like, I sometimes feel like the negativity that has been, you know, accruing around menopause, you know, for so long makes even the medical world sort of think of menopause as negative, where maybe these things, like, have to do with you know, they have to do with getting old in general. Like, are they specifically menopause things, do you think?
They are, and they're proven in randomized controlled trials. So that's they're the areas that we know there's a definite cause effect. It's not correlation with aging. And when a woman fractures her spine, she's in a lot of pain. When a woman fractures her hip, if she can't get rehabbed, she goes to a nursing home and many times dies. Women are fracturing their hips at much higher rates after menopause.
Gina on Facebook asks, can you ask the panelists about the relationship between menopause and changes in one's sexuality? Darcy, this is a big part of your book.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I mean, I definitely felt a change in my sexuality of what I was interested in doing and what felt good. You know, I luckily have a very sort of adventurous and sort of understanding partner, so we were able to have these discussions, you know. I mean, my feeling is maybe because of lessening hormones and also because of just the fact I wasn't fertile anymore, I was sort of less interested in penetration, I'll be honest, you know. I mean, I felt like there was lots of stuff in the menu. I have a varied sexual life and I was interested in, you know, I wasn't really interested in like propping up intercourse with, you know, hormonal creams or anything like that. My feeling was I was more interested in really going with what my body and my desire really wanted, you know, which was often different kinds of things, you know, not the same sort of sexual acts that I enjoyed, you know, when I was a fertile woman.
And that's the key, good communication with your partner, what feels good, what doesn't feel good. Some women experience vaginal dryness to the extent that it's very painful, even wearing tight clothes or walking. And the first third of the urethra, the tube from the bladder out, is estrogen dependent. So some women get more frequent urinary tract infections. Those women can be easily helped with a low dose coconut oil for lubrication, but then a low-dose vaginal estrogen that doesn't get absorbed systemically and does not increase the risk of breast cancer or heart disease that the black box warning may indicate.
We're going to go to Dr. Barbara Slager from Coastal Women's Healthcare in Gorham. Hi, Dr. Slager. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, good. Hello. How are you guys?
Good.
Hi, Barb.
Susan.
Hi, Barb. Good to hear your voice.
You bet.
Barb and I work together.
Yeah. I just I wanted to say that as a bread and butter chained obstetrician gynecologist, that there's not a dearth of people who can take care of women in menopause. Any obstetrician gynecologist is trained in menopausal discussions, and so I wouldn't want to leave the women of Maine hearing that it's a hard thing to find a provider to talk about these things with. You know, in our office, we have 8 physicians, 3 nurse practitioners, and we're all quite comfortable having those conversations with women. And I would agree that it's a broader conversation than just talking about whether you're going to use hormone replacement. I would agree with the other person on the line that we talk about a holistic approach to, are you exercising care? Are you, how are your relationships? Where are you in terms of your parenting and, you know, your relationship with your partner? Those things all go into menopause that I think we think that we have to pile that onto the menopause diagnosis, that these things tend to happen at the same time that women are going through menopause. And so I think culturally we wrap those things into one piece and say, oh, that you're going through menopause and therefore these other things are maybe happening in your life. And I just want to say that as providers of women, we all want to make a space to talk to women about those things in a traditional medical office. because we realize that that's part of the holistic care of the patient.
Dr. Slaker, let me ask you, do you believe that that's true throughout Maine? This is a statewide program, that throughout Maine there's adequate training for OBGYNs everywhere?
Yes, because hormone replacement is really a small part of menopausal medicine, like your other guest is talking about. We're really talking about, like, exercise and what that can do for physiology. We're talking about all sorts of things. But yes, I would say that there is an increased awareness that we're not just talking about hormones like the Women's Health Initiative indicated. We're talking about taking care of the woman holistically in every part of her life, whether it's postpartum or, you know, as she's approaching menopause. And so, you know, we're well versed in what hormonal medications we might be able to use, or antidepressants, or, you know, things that can be used vaginally for relief from painful intercourse. But I just want to push around the idea that there's this other broader care of the patient that is part of the menopausal transition that really, women and, you know, I know a lot of the residents trained at Maine Medical Center, and they're actually working locally in communities all throughout Maine, and they are trained in menopausal medicine.
So the reason I was just asking you is just this morning I read the AARP study that said that 20% of OBGYN residency programs don't provide, only 20% provide menopause training. That's not your experience.
No, and I think a lot of it is, I mean, Susan would agree with this, it's a lot of trial and error. You try something that works for one person, and they may find it incredibly effective, and then some people won't. And so if you're going to be using medications, sometimes there's transdermal versus compounded versus oral. And I think one area we haven't even stepped into is how expensive all these preparations are. They're quite expensive for a lot of people. And so a lot of people can't afford, you know, compounded medication. And that's another thing that we are well versed in. We have some compounding pharmacies in Maine that are excellent and work with us in trying to help people with lower cost medications. But I would say that yes, you know, I think a lot of it is you know, boots on the ground, talking to your patient and hearing from them what's working for them and what isn't.
All right. Well, thanks so much for calling in. That's Dr. Barbara Slager, OBGYN at Coastal Women's Healthcare in Gorham. I apologize to all of the posts and callers I'm not going to be able to get into. We've certainly touched on something here. I'll go to this one from a man. I'm a 50-year-old man. My wife is 47. What is the coaching your panel would give to menopausal women's partners to sensitively and sincerely be present and intentional in being a good partner during menopause? Darcy, I'll throw this one to you first.
I just love that man. Okay, so I think the main thing is to really be open to the changes that are happening to your partner, you know, being willing to communicate. There may be different things that you want to do in bed. Your, like, intimate life may have changed. It's important never, ever to make fun of her. Mm-hmm. And I would say not even tease her, you know, like if she has a hot flash. I mean, my husband always, you know, my hot flashes were when my hot flashes were at their worst, we had these cold packs in the freezer, and he would just, you know, he wouldn't even say anything. He would just see me going through it, and then he would just go and get one and hand it to me, you know. So I think there's lots of ways that that husbands can care for their women. But I think the main thing is to not think that it's against you. A lot of the men that I've talked to, both for the book and then I've talked to since then, a lot of them, I mean, their attitudes changed, you know, when they read my book, Come Flat. On Flash Count Diary, but a lot of them felt like the menopausal wives were against them somehow. Actually, they weren't, like, interested in them anymore. They, you know what I mean? So, and I think that's not really true. I think that problem really has to do with lack of communication. Mm-hmm. You know, like, if they could talk more about the changes in their, like, intimate life, you know, what she's going through, then I think they could be closer than ever. I mean, I feel like I'm actually, I mean, because of some of these, you know, hard conversations, I'm closer to my husband than I've ever been since I've been through menopause, you know. So I think it's a lot about, I mean, you know, I used to make a joke and say it's about conversation and a lot of lube. You know what I mean? I think there's something to that, you know.
Well, Darcy, thank you. Yeah. And Susan, only have a couple seconds, but you are nodding. You agree with
what Darcy
said.
Communication is very important. And men would ask my husband, what would your advice be? And he would say, don't take it personally. Just understand it's temporary, and just listen and don't try to fix it. Just be present.
All right. Well, both of you, what a terrific conversation. The voice you just heard, Susan Dowdy, a women's health nurse practitioner and adjunct clinical faculty member with Simmons University, and Darcy Steinke, the author of several books. Her most recent is Flashpoint Diary. She's also taught writing at many universities. I'll say that name again because I think I stumbled. Darcy Steinke, and her book is Flashpoint Diary. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. Our theme song was composed by Mike Jandreau. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. This is Maine Public Radio.